Oh, he's getting the hairdryer treatment. He forgot to check if the diesel they owned between 2009 and 2020 was eligible for significant compensation. Don't be next. Check My Diesel Claim now. Sponsors of Football on Sports Social.
This episode is brought to you by Shopify, the all-in-one commerce platform to start, run, and grow your business. Whether you're selling flaky salt or fine art prints, Shopify covers all your sales channels to simplify selling online and in person. Plus, they provide industry-leading tools and 24/7 support to ignite your growth. This is Possibility, powered by Shopify. To sign up, visit shopify.co.uk/podcast23, all lowercase.
Spring is here, which means we can all play sport outside again. In shorts, on grass, without turning blue. And here's a little something to make you feel even happier. If you owned or leased any diesel vehicle between 2009 and 2020, then you could be entitled to significant compensation. Plus, it's free to sign up and you can check your eligibility instantly. So make sure you're not left in the cold. Sign up today and come join the millions of drivers who have already put their trust in us. Head to mydieselclaim.com to start your claim now.
Season 5 complete. Hello and welcome to episode 36 of this season's Real Football Cast. As always, I'm your host Dan Tracy, and in the next 60 minutes, we'll be dissecting all the hot topics in football. As per usual, we'll be discussing what's been going on in the Premier League over the past few days, while in addition to that, there are also some off-pitch activities that have caught our eye and they'll be getting our attention in the next hour. It's been another incredible week of football, and this week it's two up top. That means leading the line and wearing the captain's armband is Carl. So Carl, how have you been since we last spoke?
Yeah, really good, thanks Dan. Kind of glad the season's over in a way. It's gone on for a long while, hasn't it? And, you know, at least we finished with a bang. And looking forward to chatting all things Premier League, mate.
Absolutely. One last time, which means we're also joined by Fulham fan Matthew for the final episode of the season. Matthew, how are things with you, my friend? I hope all is well.
I'm very good, although I am slightly worried. I've come in non-uniform, but I didn't bring my 50p for the last episode of the season, so I'm worried if I have to go home and change.
No, you'll be all right, obviously. There's obviously board games as well if you want to play as well, if you get bored of chatting to me for 60 minutes. But you're in the right place, Matthew. 50p not needed. This one's on me. So before we chat Premier League for the final time of the season, let's do the social media bits. Otherwise, we'll be talking into the abyss once more. First, if you want to get in touch with me, you can. That's on Twitter, at DanTracy1983. Also, the podcast has its own account, which is at RealFootballPods. And if you want to become a shareholder, all you need to do is follow and join our very elite members club. Talking of clubs, I'm delighted to announce we're now part of the UK's first ever sports podcast network, that being Sports Social. So check out the URL and all the links posted throughout the week on the Real Football Pod account. You can find me via iTunes by searching for Real Football Cast. If you use that platform, don't forget to subscribe so you don't miss a single episode. And if you like us, leave a review so we move up the league table. And the easy way to find all links is by going to linktree.com/realfootballcast, but adopting the R and the E, you get 10 podcast platforms to choose from. It's never been easier to listen to this show. Right then, it's time to go live. And where should we go first? Let's go to the final day relegation battle. And although it was not steeped in the biggest amount of drama that we've usually seen in seasons gone by, Carl, it's fair to say that Everton will be breathing a huge sigh of relief after Sunday's home win over Bournemouth.
Yeah, 100%, Dan. You know, they've been in this position a couple of times now, haven't they? And I'm sure it's, you know, someone who's thankfully never had to go through it. I'm sure it's not a pleasant thing to have to watch or go through, and the nerves are probably all shot. But they just about managed to do enough, didn't they, to get themselves over the line. I think, you know, Leeds, I don't think were ever going to cause them the biggest problem that day. I think Leicester were the ones they knew that were going to give them the biggest problem and the biggest issue about needing to get a result. But thankfully, they managed, you know, to get that result over the line, get the win, secure their survival, and another season in the Premier League where I'm sure they'll need to try and make sure they do everything they can so they're not in this position again next season. How they do that, I'm not so sure. You know, it's going to take a lot of good investment in the summer. You know, Sean Dyche is going to have to be given what he probably needs, but they may feel they've got the right manager there in charge that can give them more of a chance next season of not taking it down to the wire.
Now, Matthew, we did mention that Everton's easier fixtures were likely to be their saving grace across the last fortnight of the season. it came with 4 points for the last six on offer. They've still got to go and get those points, obviously. But when you're looking at those fixtures and the hand they were dealt, it's fair to say that gave them a massive boost, didn't it?
Yeah, exactly. There is a lot of this thing. Everyone has to play every team twice. So it's not exactly as if Everton had an advantage over everything. But if you look at the way that, as you said, easier fixtures lined up for them, I think that may have partly been part of why, you know, there was always this such belief in Everton. You know, even with three games to go, I think Sky had the stats over Everton had an 83% chance to stay up or something along those lines. Because I know, looking at the last few games, the teams had to play, you know, Leeds had to go and play Spurs, who were on the last day trying to fight for a European place. West Ham, maybe, as I said before, trying to get players wanting to prove themselves, trying to get into the Europa Conference League final squad. So, yeah, it's just the fact that, there were other factors in it, but yeah, the fixtures as they lined up certainly were a big factor in why Everton stayed up.
Now, Cole, there's no doubt that the atmosphere has been rather toxic at Goodison Park across this season, and that tension has often filtered through to the pitch. You know, it's stormy in the stands, a lack of confidence on the field. Now, when Leicester were safe for that period, it could have gone quite nasty for Everton, but I think you've got to give the fans credit for backing their team a good voice, and that shone through at the end, didn't it?
Yeah, I think ultimately, as a fan, even if you're kind of disgruntled with the way things are happening and that, I think in that moment while the game's going ahead, you know that ultimately the only way you're really going to help your club and side is by making it a good atmosphere and an intimidating one for your rivals. And, you know, we all know that, you know, when Goodison Park is rocking, that is some stadium and it creates some atmosphere. So I think you do have to credit the fans to say, listen, you know, they knew they needed to stick with the side right till the bitter end. Obviously, if results probably had gone a different way, I would imagine that at the full-time whistle, we probably would have seen something a lot more toxic, and the fans then would have kind of let their feelings be known. But they knew they had to stay with the side right till the end just to try and help get some form of result. So you have got to give them credit for that. But I'm sure, you know, like as you say, I'm pretty sure no Everton fan was celebrating at the final whistle, more of a kind of release of relief that you've managed to survive. And now, you know, the Inquisition will start and, you know, wanting to make sure that they let the board know that this can't happen again will kick in the next few weeks and months that come before next season starts.
Yeah, I mean, compared to last season staying up when they got the better of, was it Crystal Palace and the big pitch invasion? There wasn't that same kind of relief, was it? I mean, there was relief, but it wasn't that same kind of like euphoria as what we saw 12 months ago. It was a kind of case really, Matthew, of, we're only staying up because we're the fourth worst team rather than kind of staying up by our own merit, so to speak.
Yeah, I think that's fair. You know, you look at the teams that are around them, you know, if, you know, just one result goes better or goes a different way, and just how far adrift Everton were, the, you know, towards the last stage, and how we saw teams start to pull away from the relegation. Yeah, I think fourth worst kind of does say it, but, you know, they probably weren't aiming for that at the start of the season, but at the end of the season, that's really... Oh, that's exactly what they wanted.
Now, Carl, we look at their goal tally for the season, 34, which was the second lowest in the league all season. So usually that's a number which sends you down. That's something they have to address over the summer. There's no doubt about that. They can't kind of run that low again next season and try and stay up. So is the issue as easy as trying to keep Dominic Calvert-Lewin fit? Or do you reckon Sean Dyche has to look in a different direction for next season's goals?
I think it's a mixture of both there, probably, Dan. You know, you need to get Calvert-Lewin fit and on the pitch, because we have seen from the way that he plays, he is a real handful and he will score goals when he's fit. So I think obviously, yes, one, it's getting him fit and on the pitch. But then I do think, you know, you need to find something else, because given his track record with injuries, you know he's going to have a spell out. So you need to get someone else in that can complement him and also score some goals. You know, they've tried it with Mo Pye, hasn't he? But that just hasn't worked. It's also more goals from midfield, isn't it? You know, you need to try and find a 15 to 20 goal a season midfielder to kind of, if you want to be in the upper echelons of the Premier League. You know, we had that at a certain point with players like Dele Alli scoring, you know, vital goals that he did on a regular basis. And when that dries up and you're reliant on one man up top, it's very hard, because, you know, we're lucky that we've got Kane, who is super prolific. But without him, I'd think Spurs would probably be mid-table around that sort of mark, you know, and it just goes to show that goals are vital. So Everton will need to try and cure that next season. And obviously Calvert-Lewin getting a rest and getting him back will be a big help. But they'll need to find numbers from somewhere else.
And Matthew, with Jordan Pickford putting pen to paper on a new deal earlier in the season and the Toffees staying in the Premier League, do you reckon this wards off any interest from potential suitors in the summer? Or is it another, perhaps potential area of improvement? Could Sean Dyche look at this man between the sticks and think, do you know what, maybe it's time for change?
I think that's a tough one because I think it would be hard. I think if you bring someone in to replace Jordan Pickford, you've got to get rid of him. I don't think the market for Pickford is as big as it probably was a couple of years ago. So I think there might be some teams, you know, you've looked at how they've been down the bottom the last 2 years. There might be some teams that think maybe, you know, is he worth the hassle, as it were? Because he does pull off some great saves, as he did in the, you know, in the dying moments. But also he's got a bit of an attitude. Do you really want him? I don't think there's going to be that much of a market for him to go. So I don't think there's going to be much of a need for them to replace him. I think Pickford is certainly someone who can. He's a very good, a very decent Premier League goalkeeper. I think to bring someone in order to replace him, I think that's, you know, money that could probably go elsewhere in the squad.
Yeah, from a Tottenham point of view, this is me kind of giving my opinion. If you could get the Pickford that played for England every week, I think it'd be fantastic for someone like Spurs. But there's always the risk that you get the Pickford who plays for Everton, and that's where the mistakes come in, and they're kind of not that same Pickford you see in international tournaments. They are kind of two different players in one person, and that's the kind of dichotomy that I guess any buying club looking at Pickford would have to sort of to deal with. So probably because of that basis alone, that I feel that Pickford's probably going to be still in an Everton jersey. But then again, sometimes when you're playing so much football uncontested, that's where complacency comes around, and maybe you just need a fresh start and a move. But anyway, a move's going to certainly happen at Leicester in terms of their players, because, Cole, another stint in the Championship for them, their roller coaster over the last decade or so continues. And although the Foxes did their bit on Sunday, that also highlighted the danger when you have to rely on other teams to help you out.
Yeah, it's a position you never want to be in, isn't it? You know, you always want to have your own destiny in your own hands. And unfortunately for Leicester, that just wasn't a luxury that they had on that last day. And as like as you say, although they did their job on the last day, ultimately, it was not doing their job in the weeks leading up to that that's cost them this weekend and cost them their Premier League survival. And I'm pretty sure, as we all know, you know, that side is going to lose some key players, and you'll find it hard to kind of replace those players. And I'm sure, as Matthew will tell us, that Championship is not an easy league just to think you're going to go down and bounce back up straight away and think that you'll have it all your own way. And yeah, don't matter, we'll be back in the Premier League. I think the only good thing, if you're a Leicester fan, and the comforting thing is, you know, the chairman has come out and said, listen, we'll bounce back from that, and we're going to do all we can to kind of make sure we return. So, you know, that's better than having a chairman that doesn't really say anything and seem to care. So I'm pretty sure Leicester will do everything they can to return. But I think given the players that they're going to lose and some of the players they've got that are, you know, hitting the wrong age, players like Vardy, I'm not so sure they'll come back up at the first attempt.
Yeah, we'll get to some of the departures in just a moment. But Matthew, I want to just focus again on the Newcastle game that they played the week before last. That's come back into the spotlight in terms of the game plan. Now, should Dean Smith have been bolder at St James's and rolled the dice, could risk defeat? Or is this just a case of hindsight being a wonderful thing and we're all looking at that and thinking, well, had they got the win, they'd be fine. You know, is it that easy to make that assumption?
I think a lot of it is hindsight, because I remember coming on the same thing. Yeah, if you go to a team like Newcastle, who were fighting for, you know, they needed something to get to the Champions League, you ran the risk of doing it. So you could only really control things one step at a time. And again, they went into it knowing, you know, if they could just be in a position and then hope that something happened, you'd much rather have that, at least, you know, delay the inevitable, than go for it. And I don't think mathematically they would have been relegated. It just would have made it all that much more harder for them on the final day. So I think in that sense, Dean Smith did what he, you know, did the best he could in that situation. As you say, hindsight is 20/20, but I'm not gonna put too much blame on him, especially because he was still very much playing from behind the eight ball. In that, you know, he had a very bad situation when he picked up, and he was trying to make the best of it.
Yeah, I mean, in the grand scheme of things, it wouldn't have sent Leicester down had they lost. Obviously, the win coupled with Sunday's win would have kept them up. So it's that real delicate balancing act, really. But as you say, we're all easy to sort of become managers after the game and say, well, had he done that 7 days before, you know, Leicester stay up. It's never that simple. And I think, as you rightly say, Matthew, we were commending the game plan on last week's show. So it's very harsh to then sort of go against it in this week's one. But, Cole, talking of hindsight, do you think the Leicester board in any way will regret not giving Brendan Rodgers the full season? Do you reckon he earned the right to coach them up until May, or did Leicester need the change to at least take it to the final day and stay in the survival hunt?
I think the biggest problem that maybe the Leicester board made was that they wasn't more aggressive with that move. You know, that they'd obviously made their mind up they were going to do it, but then they did it and then left them rudderless for a few games. And ultimately, you could look at that and go, that might have been what cost them. You know, they had a couple of pivotal home games during that period that, you know, you could say maybe if they'd had someone in and in charge at that point, whether it be Dean Smith or someone else, maybe they would have got another couple of results. And, you know, you're only talking, they only needed, say, maybe one more win or a couple more draws and they would have been okay. So I think ultimately, you know, managers know this is a cutthroat league, and if you're not getting results, then, you know, I'm afraid you're out the door. So I don't think they owed Rodgers anything to keep him on. But I think where their problem was is when they did get rid of him, they then kind of sat on their hands a little bit too long before acting, which kind of showed you that they didn't actually have a game plan going in when they did it. And I think, as we'd all agree now, that is probably a cardinal sin if you're a bull, because you should have all these scenarios worked out as to what you want to do, what route you're going to go down, and how you're going to act if you do something. So they probably will learn a lesson from this and say we need to be better prepared for these sort of scenarios in the future.
Now, Matthew, much is going to be made, or much has been made already, of Leicester's squad value and the fact it's gone down. So there's going to be loads of names linked to elsewhere, some out of contract, some sold. The obvious one's James Maddison, but I'm going to ask you about Harvey Barnes. Can you see him making a Premier League return in the summer wearing different colours?
Yes, I would probably put him as probably number two or number three of the terms of most sellable assets for Leicester City. I think James Maddison is obviously number one. I think then it's probably Harvey Barnes, and probably, it might be controversial, but I still think Jamie Vardy's probably got some value there, and will probably be desired by a lot of people. So I think Harvey Barnes definitely will. What kind of team will go after him? I don't think he'll be one of the big six, but I could certainly see a team. I could personally see a team like Everton going after him. Now that they've stayed up, so there certainly will be a market. I think he'll be one of the first out the door once teams get their hands on him.
Now, Cole, the race for James Maddison now begins. Now, Newcastle are the favourites if you look at the bookmakers' odds. They're not, you know, the gospel, but they are an indicative guide, if nothing else. So when you look at the England international, what he plays and how he plays each week, and then you look at Bruno Guimaraes, are they going to be too alike of each other? Now, Bruno Guimaraes can play as a number six, and he has played there quite often for Newcastle this season, but there's always a sense that they aren't getting the best out of him, and he'd be better suited going forward. So can they sort of cram Maddison into that midfield, or are they better off looking elsewhere?
I guess it's one of them, isn't it? It would be a nice luxury to have, wouldn't it? And if you're a team like Newcastle now, where you're now looking to kind of start broaching the next levels of where you want to be, then you need to start having a squad that you can turn to. And should one player not be in form, or suddenly with the run of games and fixtures you're going to have coming up with Champions League and Cups, and, you know, again, trying to fight on a Premier League front to make sure you're at least back in the top four and even pushing for, say, maybe third or second the following year, then I don't see why you wouldn't. And especially given the sort of money that Newcastle are going to have available to them, then for me, you look to go out and build a squad that you know is, as we've always said with Man City, you bring a player off, you put basically a like-for-like player on. So for me, I can see that being a real attractive opportunity for Newcastle and an attractive opportunity for James Maddison, because let's face it now, if there's teams you want to go to, you're probably looking, Man City would be the ultimate because you know they're going to win things, but Newcastle is the next project you desperately want to be a part of, knowing the trajectory that club are going to head into. So I don't think it's a problem at all. all. I think it'd be great to have two players like that in your squad, because you know you've got talent on the pitch that can win you games, and also a squad that will allow you to rotate and rest sometimes.
With that in mind, Matthew, is this something that Maddison and other Leicester players who are looking to move may have to accept, that if you're trying to stay in the Premier League as a player, you can't necessarily walk into a first 11 because you've just been part of a relegated club? So your own stock takes a bit of a battering, and maybe you have to accept a period on the bench, less minutes perhaps, but at least you're part of the bigger picture, higher up the table.
I think some players that role probably will. You know, I mentioned Jamie Vardy. I think he'll go to a club, but he'll be an off the bench player. He'll be second string. Someone like James Maddison, though, I think it's sort of widely accepted that he wasn't the reason that Leicester went down. So it's not like his stock went. Like James Ward-Prowse was not the reason Southampton went down. He will go into a Premier League squad and he will probably be starting for a lot of them. I think it's the same with James Maddison. I think most people recognise he wasn't the reason they went down. He can still bring an offer a lot. Now, there may be some of the fringe players like Kelechi Iheanacho, say again, in the same thing. He might say, oh, I can stay in the Premier League. I'm a Premier League player. He might need to drop down to, you know, down to squad level. So for a couple of them, I think he will be. But I don't think James Maddison's probably in that sort of category.
OK, then, Cole. One player who is always going to be leaving regardless of league status is Youri Tielemans. Now, I think it's fair to say he's been a shadow of his former self during this season. Do you reckon there's an element of down tools knowing that he was never staying about, or is there something more to his lack of performances? Because, you know, when he first comes to the King Power, we as Tottenham fans are sort of thinking, how on earth has he slipped through the net? And a lot of clubs are looking quite envious, like Arsenal were linked with him as well. You kind of look at him now and think, where would he go? I mean, he'll go somewhere because there's still always going to be a club who wants him, but he's not the same Tielemans that joined the Premier League, what, 4 or 5 seasons ago?
Yeah, that's right. I think this season may have just tarnished that reputation that he had, because I do think there probably was an element of down in tools and maybe suddenly thinking, well, listen, I'm better than this. I don't maybe need to put the same effort in, because even if Leicester go down, I know I won't be here the following season. And he hasn't produced the goods this season. And, you know, you do have to look at players like him and say, well, listen, you're part of the reason this side went down and your attitude wasn't great. And I think there would be some managers that might go, oh, well, actually, listen, you know, before this season, we was really interested, but has he got the right personality and the right traits that we want coming into the club? So I do think he may have, you know, the season he's had may have kind of risked, say, one of those glamour moves for him. But as we know in the world of football, Dan, players always get moves because some other manager will think, well, no, listen, I'll get the best out of him. And once he's in a team that's not struggling at the wrong end of the table, he'll produce more than he'll let me down. So he'll get a move, but I don't think he's covered himself in glory this season.
Now, Matthew, let's ask you about the Championship and how brutal it really is. Obviously, as a Fulham fan, you haven't quite had the full effect of that brutalness because you've come down, you've gone straight back up. So you've kind of absorbed it as good as you can. Can Leicester do that? When they look at the potential player exodus, are they going to be the team that wins the Championship next time around?
I don't think so. I think, because, you know, you look at what we've managed to do. Every time we've gone down the last two times, we've had a number of our key players have stuck around. There have been some changes, but Mitrovic has been with us, you know, in both of our last, well, three, but mainly the last two promotion challenges, as was Tom Kearney, as was Tim Ream. You know, Kenny Tete, our right back, was with us in the Premier League. We managed to keep him. Like, I could go on. Whereas I think with Leicester, I think there are going to be so many exits, especially with key players. Like, if they'd have been able to hold on to James Maddison and Harvey Barnes, just those two, I would fancy them to come up. But if we accept that those two, the big, you know, the arguably the big two and Youri Tielemans are going to go, then I don't think it's going to be as easy as they get. Again, how much they're going to get for those players and how much they can reinvest is a different matter. But I think part of it is you can change a couple of players, but if you lose a lot of that core of your squad, that's when, you know, it can be done, but I don't necessarily think it will be done, especially when it comes to a side like Leicester.
Well, in a perverse way, it might be that Leeds or Southampton win the Championship because they've got less to lose, if that makes sense. You know, less players that you want to pluck off now. And because of that, the core of their team is still the same for next season. But let's focus on Leeds now, Cole, anyway, because they are the other team that joined Leicester in the dump on Sunday. When you look at the first 2 minutes of that game, their survival bid was over as soon as it began.
Yeah, and it kind of some leads up over the last few months, didn't it? You know, it's just like, listen, start well, do what you need to do and get yourself a foothold in the game. And it all just went out the window pretty instantly with some dreadful defending and leaving yourselves miles open. And, you know, as we know, in this league, if you want to defend like that, you are going to get taken to the cleaners by most sides that are in it. And ultimately, I think that scoreline at the weekend just sum leads up right now, where it's like defensively a mess. They've got a lot of work to do. And ultimately, that's what's cost them this season. You know, lack of goals. They missed some really good chances in the opening sort of trades of that game, where they might have given themselves a chance and some momentum. But ultimately, just defensively, so poor. And, you know, can only look at themselves as to the reason they've gone down this season.
Well, Matthew, let's look at the number, which is most important. 78 goals conceded. That's more than two on average against. Now, when you look at any club that gets relegated, a Premier League club cannot survive on such defensive generosity, can they?
No, they can't. And, you know, there was always risk. This was always the risky lead side. Even going back to, you know, Marcelo Bielsa days, is there was always the risk that they would, you know, a thing on the... Was it their first day in the Premier League? Was it 4-1 they lost to Man United? Or something along those lines? There was always this risk with Leeds, and then carried on to Jesse March, was a similar system. It's just always been there with Leeds, and eventually their luck was going to run out. You know, arguably could have run out last season. But yeah, if you want to survive in the Premier League, arguably the first thing you need to do is have a solid defence. You can't stay up, or at least expect to stay up long term, if you're going to keep passing off, you know, games like that, which is why, you know, if they'd have gone for Sam Allardyce the first time round, after they got rid of Jesse Marsh, rather, you maybe could have made the argument that he would have had enough time to sort the defence out and make them squeak through. But in the short space of time, it was, you know, in Sam Allardyce's case at least, far too little too late.
Now, Carl, I mentioned the Everton fans being a force for good on Sunday. Is it fair to say that the atmosphere at Elland Road would have not helped towards the end? I mean, you only have to look at Lucas Moura's goal. As good as it was, you kind of got the feeling that these heads have massively dropped. I don't think Luke Ayling really made a tackle, did he? So it was a great goal, but I think Leeds had really thrown in the towel, and that came from the kind of vicious noise that they were getting from the stands.
Yeah, I think ultimately, you know, it was a little bit of a difference, wasn't it? You know, Everton knew they were still in with a shout. And again, I would sit there and say that if Sunday Everton were playing a team like, say, Man City and were 4-1 down, you would have seen a different atmosphere at Goodison Park. So I think the atmosphere just stemmed from the fact that they knew they were doomed. And again, as we've said, when you've been watching sort of defending like they've seen all season, I think they just knew it wasn't good enough. And then they realised that that was the time they wanted to vent their feelings. And as you said, Dan, you know, Lucas Moura's goal is one of those people will show as this great run and great solo goal. But when you analyse the defending, you just go, wow, that is some shambolic defending in there with half-hearted tackles, players selling themselves left, right and centre, and a guy that didn't really have to do much other than just run in one direction with the ball. You know, so it summed it up, and I think Leeds fans just wanted to let their feelings be known at the end, because it was, you know, it was clear from early doors after, say, those first couple of minutes that the writing was on the wall for them that day.
Well, Matthew, a fair bit of frustration was actually sent in the direction of midfielder Weston McKennie. Now, he arrived on loan under Jesse Marsh, but since the departure of the American manager, the American internationals look rather lost at Elland Road and probably can't wait to get back to Juventus if he's not there already.
Yeah, exactly. It was one of the weirder decisions that, you know, Leeds effectively built their transfer window or staked a lot of their transfer reputation success on Weston McKennie coming in, because he's known. He's familiar with Jesse Marsh's style and what have you, or he could work well in the style. But then you get rid of Jesse Marsh like less than a week later or pretty soon after. So, yeah, it just didn't quite work out for him. And obviously there must have been a lot of disenfranchisement from him. Like, all right, well, what am I doing here? If I've been brought in to play specifically to one system and then another manager comes in and then Sam Allardyce comes in, I imagine there's probably would have been a lot of frustration with him. And if that frustration boils down to not putting in very many good performances, then that's gonna show, and makes you a pretty easy target for, you know, for Leeds United fans who can be very brutal at sometimes. And it just so happened that on this day, you know, on yesterday, yeah, he was just, there was a lot of anger going around, and he just it was always going to come down on him eventually at some point.
Yeah, I mean, it must be tough for him because, as I say, you kind of, you sold the pitch by Jesse Marsh and then you're finishing up your time at Leeds under Big Sam. It's kind of, I know football moves quickly at times, but it must be a bit bizarre for him. If it's Big Sam trying to get him into Ellen Road to start with, I don't think he makes the move in the first place. But, Carl, talking of Big Sam himself, the conversation regarding who's the next manager at Leeds will start now, if not in the next couple of days.
Yeah, that's, it's an interesting one, isn't it? I'm not so sure if it will be Sam Allardyce that kind of takes that job on. I'm under the impression, I reckon he was brought in as a bit of a firefighter and listen, you know, that's, can you just do what we need to do for a few games and get us out of it? But I'm not so sure if you're a Leeds fan, ultimately, and I don't mean this horribly to Big Sam, because, you know, some of the jobs he's done in the past, you give him a lot of credit for the way his team's played football and the results he got. But I wouldn't want him to be possibly now, if you like, the future of football for my club, because I think, you know, the game possibly is moving on past him. I know we had his pep comments and that he's got the football knowledge, but I think when you see his style of football, you do go, I'm not so sure that's how I want my team playing and what I see for us doing in the long term. So I reckon he was just in there to see if he could get them out of trouble, but I think they'll look for someone else to go take the club forward right now. Who that is, though, is not an easy choice. You know, if we say Gerrard, is there any, you know, is anybody convinced after his stint at Villa that he could come in and do a job at Leeds right now? I'm not so sure he is.
Well, yeah, I mean, his stock's not the greatest after Villa, and I think a lot is not going to help Matthew regarding the ownership situation at Elland Road, because there's talk of the San Francisco 49ers increasing their stake, but I guess that conversation is a lot louder when Leeds are a Premier League club. Are they going to want to take on this asset at lesser value? So how does that tie in to a new manager?
Well, I think it sort of does help the 49ers in a sense, because now they can probably make the argument that they should be able to, you know, I don't know what the figures are, but rather than paying X amount, they can play half of X amount to try and increase their stake or take over Leeds United. I think in terms of the manager, it's the uncertainty around it, because, you know, owners might have different stays in how they want the club run. You know, if the 49ers do complete their deal, they may want one manager. If they don't, then the current board may say, okay, we're going to go down this route. So a lot of uncertainty. So it is one of these things that Leeds have to sort out very, very quickly. But I will say, I will give one name that I think is going to be very interesting. If he's brave enough to say that he's not a Premier League manager anymore, and he wants to buy, and Leeds can sell him we want you to come back and rebuild the long-term project, I would not rule out Brendan Rodgers taking the Leeds job. Because I think, he's someone that can be there for the long run, has experience in the Championship and the Premier League as well. And I think he's probably just the right man to sort of say, right, let's go. Opposite to Big Sam football, plays attractive football and can get them winning at Championship level. So I think Brendan Rodgers would be my shout for Leeds manager at this point.
It's not the worst shout. I'll get to a bit more Brendan in a minute. So you've thrown a good option in the air. We're going to have to discuss something else. So not just yet, but certainly soon. So where next? Southampton, because they are a second tier club as well. Now, Carl, there's always one Premier League match which always gives that end of turn vibes on the final day. And I think this season's award safely goes to their 4-4 draw with Liverpool.
Yeah, and you get the impression it's one of those games, isn't it, where players are just like, well, listen, you know, that's it. I mean, I remember a few seasons ago, Dan, we had a 5-4
yes,
with Leicester,
did.
Didn't
that's
we?
Right.
And it was just a game where both teams were like, listen, gung-ho, we're not worrying about defending in this game, let's go for it. And they are great end-of-season spectacles. And, you know, if you're there, you can say, well, yeah, what a game. And almost what a way to sign out for Southampton. I'm sure it would have been tinged with a lot of disappointment because, again, that's a club that you sit there now and go, can you see them bouncing straight back up? I'm not so sure they can. And then obviously you worry about the long-term future and, you know, whether they can stabilise and do what they need to. But that certainly was one of those end-of-season games that, you know, when they do those Sky look-backs, you know, season, you know, 94 and 95, that will definitely be the highlight of that final day.
Now, Matthew, I don't know about you, but I feel that Southampton have lost all identity that they had. I feel they've become like a Watford Mark II. Not as mad in terms of the managers, but you're looking at players and it's this conveyor belt of just substandard European talent and you just think, who are these names? You know, not like Luddites thinking, oh no, they can't sign European footballers, but the kind of calibre name has really dropped off in the last couple of years. And you kind of look at those names, you think, have they got the stomach for a 46-game championship season? Probably not. So I don't know if fears is the right word, because you don't really care, you're not a Southampton fan, but is there that concern that they are going to struggle in the second tier?
I think that concern is legitimate. I think a lot of it would come down to, I think I've mentioned this in previous weeks, is you probably want to have a lot of faith in that the Southampton conveyor belt that, you know, produced a lot of players. You know, whilst they did have very good European talent, there was a lot of youngsters coming through and played a big part in all of it. So you would hope that there is still enough of a talent base there for them to build, you know, the core of the squad around, and a lot, and you know, and English players as well, homegrown players as well. So that's probably going to be what they're going to want to build strength around, which in a way would help them get back to that identity. So I'm not going to say that this relegation is a good thing for them, but I overheard you and Carl talking about Spurs, how it'd be a wake-up call. I think this might serve as a wake-up call for Southampton to say, look, this has worked in the past, and assuming the academy talent is still there, this might be the way for us to go back and, you know, get these players for cheap, for free, and then, you know, scatter it with, you know, a couple of good additions here and there. So I think this relegation could actually be a very good reset for them, as you say.
Yeah, I mean, the potential is there for them to bounce back, and it's all fine. It's just how you deal with it, isn't it? And you can go in two different paths, really. You can embrace it and say, right, we're going to wipe the decks and we're going to build for the future and get that conveyor belt churning again. Or we can throw more mud at the wall, bury our heads in the sand, try and get out first time round and set yourself backwards. So it's going to be an interesting few months for Southampton. It's going to be a really interesting few months at Chelsea, because nothing to play for on Sunday, but they played in a new manager on Monday. Mauricio Pochettino is the man. Carl, as a Spurs fan, are you feeling bitter in any way, or is this just modern day management for you?
No, I think it's modern day management, Dan. And also, you know, I have seen a lot of Spurs fans that have come across very bitter over the last day or so. But then ultimately, you have to ask yourself the honest question and say, well, if Spurs never gave Mauricio a call, then what's he meant to do? You know, he can't just sit around and hope that one day the call might come. And when you look at it, I'm not so sure even if the call come, would you really fancy coming back and working under the sort of Enoch ownership, knowing that it's kind of let you down previously, and will it just let you down again? And ultimately, when you look at the side that you're going to now, yes, they've had a poor season, but I think you can be pretty confident that it's, you know, a club that's going to make sure that that sort of season doesn't happen again, and probably back you in the transfer market the way you might have wanted to be backed at the previous club. So there's no bitterness for me. I think Maurizio's done what he needed to. Would I have liked to have seen him back? I just still don't know, Dan, whether I would have wanted him back with us or not, because I wouldn't want him to ruin the legacy from what he had when he left us. So difficult one, but no bitterness from me. And, you know, I'm not going to say I wish him the best of luck now, because I don't. You know, I'd like to see Chelsea finish lower than they did this season, but I'm not so sure that'll happen. I wouldn't be surprised, and I'd probably bet my house on it, that this will be the team where Maurizio will be able to get a trophy over the line, and we'll be the ones sitting there at the end of the season going, oh, well, there you go. See, if he'd just been backed, this is what the man could have done.
Yeah, I mean, Matthew, I think from a neutral perspective, from your point of view, I think you've got to remember, this isn't a pot you've just gone from Tottenham, had a couple of months off and then gone straight to Chelsea. This is via Paris with another break after that. So, yes, there's the strong Tottenham connection, but Tottenham don't owe him anything, do they?
No, yeah. Enough time has passed that you imagine that you would hope the Spurs fans have moved on and said, oh, well, it is just how time rolls on. You know, there will have been some Spurs fans, I know, again, we've talked about it in the past, that one Spurs, the one Pochettino back, you know, at all costs, because he was, you know, the best manager they've had in X amount of years, and he made us, well, contenders for things and everything like that. But yeah, given the time off there's been, you know, you would hope that the emotion, everything has died down a lot, that at least a lot of Spurs fans can say, right, this is how football is, and just have to hope that it doesn't come back to haunt us, especially if, you know, depending on what appointment the Spurs make, it may well be that, oh, we got lucky because whilst they went for Poch and he didn't work for Chelsea, we got, you know, manager X and he turned out to be a revelation for us. So, yeah, it certainly is time for Spurs fans to move on in that sense.
I think we might actually have manager X at this rate. We'll get to that in just a moment. Chelsea and Mason Mount, Cole. Mason Mount injured towards the end of the season. Big question mark as to whether he's played his last ever game. With Poch in, do you reckon that's the case, or do you reckon he goes to somewhere like Manchester United or Liverpool?
Do you know what, Dan? I think we know all too well, don't we, that Poch likes, you know, those young players that he can mould, and obviously homegrown. He also likes that and wants to get them in the team, and players that feel like they've got something towards the club. So I really wouldn't be surprised if Mauricio can go there and convince Mason Mount to stay. And if he sort of says, look, you know, I'm going to build a side around you and you're going to be one of the key players in my side, then it wouldn't surprise me if he can convince him to stay. And ultimately, I guess that's it. You know, if he wants him, I think he'll be able to convince him. If he doesn't want him, then obviously I think we'll see Mason leave and turn up somewhere else. And, you know, United is possibly a great shout. And again, you know, given the trajectory that Newcastle want to go into, then I wouldn't be surprised either to see maybe Newcastle show some interest.
Yeah, it's a solid shout. But Matthew, as for the man that Poch takes over from, that being Frank Lampard, do you reckon he ever manages a Premier League club again? Maybe ever manages again? Do you reckon now his stock is so low and damaged that punditry now becomes a safer option going forward?
The only way he becomes a Premier League manager again is if he takes a Championship job and does better than what he did at Derby and actually gets them promoted. I cannot see how any Premier League squad, how any Premier League team would look to say, right, he is the man for us, you know, regardless of what situation, if it's final relegation battle or if it's just mid-table, just getting rid of someone. I don't see how a Premier League team will appoint him. If he wants to go down the punditry route just to sort of save himself any further embarrassment, I totally wouldn't blame him, but I reckon he's still got that manager bug, and he still wants to go out and, you know, prove that he can be something, because he probably feels a little bit miffed off with how things ended at, you know, at Derby and at Swansea, and the fact that he had some success, but it's just when he probably thinks, no, I can still make that happen again. Whether it's going to be at those clubs, probably not, but I think he will still put himself about a bit, but he won't get any Premier League teams, no way.
Now, when it comes to safer options, Tottenham may have to turn to Brendan Rodgers. Cole, the pickings are getting slimmer by the week. What would you say about his appointment across the summer?
This is a really tough one, isn't it, Dan? Because, again, you kind of look there and see the job that he's done with Leicester and think, oh, why would you want that sort of manager coming in? But then you look at the job he has done with Leicester before this season and the football they were playing, which was good football, you know, the FA Cup, the Community Shield. And they were a team that lots of people admired and looked to. So, you know what? I think, with the number of managers that are dwindling right now and possibly turning the club down or the club not looking at, I certainly wouldn't be surprised if that happened, because I think, you know, we've looked at Brendan before and I think there is an admiration for him there. And he could be the sort of manager that Levy thinks, well, yeah, you know, this is a guy I think I can work with. He's got the football that I think the fans want to see. And I don't think, given what's happened at Leicester, he'll come in with too many demands and too many, you know, if you like, egotistical ideas about what he is as a manager. So it certainly wouldn't surprise me. How would I feel about it? I would have to say I'd be unsure, and it would purely be a case of we need to see how this works out. And you know, again, it could be one of those, it could be a masterstroke, or you could be in a couple of months looking for, you know, another manager under the Enoch reign.
Matthew, ultimately, do Tottenham just need to name a manager rather soon? I know it's easier said than done, but we're kind of approaching Nuno levels where they're looking down the list and it's got to number 5, no, number 6, no, back to Nuno 7, yeah, get him in. And then if you're taking the job as the 6th, 7th choice, it's not really the vote of confidence you need before you started, really. So do they need to stop flirting with all these names and actually get to talk to somebody such as Brendan Rodgers and just get him in the job?
Yeah, it certainly is a tricky one, because you don't want to get a manager, you want to get the right manager, but it seems like Mr. Wright is, you know, three or four runs down. It's a hard one to say, especially going into a summer where you are working with, you know, what is Harry Kane's future going to be? Arguably the second most important, well, I actually say arguably the most important point at Spurs is working out Harry Kane's future. So you want to get someone in. If you just go out and appoint someone, is that going to be enough for Harry Kane to say, right, this is enough? Or do you want to give it that extra couple of weeks and just say, right, make sure we've got the right manager that can keep, you know, make sure that Harry Kane is on board with the project. He doesn't want to leave and all that sort of stuff. So it's a very risky, it's a very risky route to take to say, oh, let's just name a manager. At the same time, it's a risk to give it away. So it's a, I'm just, all I'm saying is I'm glad I'm not Daniel leaving Joe Lewis at this point, because it's one that could backfire either way.
Carl, be honest, do you reckon you've seen the last of Harry Kane in a Tottenham shirt?
This is really tough for me, Dan, because I really hope not, because I fear for us as to where we kind of go if Harry leaves us in the summer. But then, do you know what, Dan? Because of what the guy has done for the club, and I kind of feel what sort of professional he is, there's a little part of me that maybe thinks maybe you actually deserve now to kind of be free of this and go on, and maybe you go and win a league title or a Champions League and be able to point to people and say, well, there you go, there's my trophies. Now there's no debating that I'm one of the best strikers that, that we've seen in a long, long while. So I'm really torn. I don't want him to go, but I really wouldn't begrudge him, and I certainly wouldn't hold it against him if he did, so that he could go and win some titles and trophies somewhere.
Now, Matthew, I mean, if you went for a certain Erling Haaland, Kane's golden boot tally would be blowing out the water of his rivals. 30 goals this season, not really getting a mention, is it?
No, and I think that's a, you know, part, I think that's partly down to what Spurs have done more than anything. You know, even if Erling Haaland wasn't there, I think Spurs, is the fact that he's finished eighth, he probably still would have been downplayed a little bit, because, you know, Harry Kane's been getting these previous golden boots when they've been going for Europe, and saying, oh, his goals have been so crucial because they got them into the Europa League or the conference or the Champions League place, or got them to second. But when you're finishing where you, where they are, everything sort of gets played down a little bit more. So early Haaland is part of it, but I think the overall struggles of Spurs also plays a role in what has been, you know, a very fantastic season for him. I was going to say by normal standards, by any standards, it's been a fantastic year for him.
Now, no European football for Spurs, but it will be for Villa. And Carl, when we look at the managerial appointments of the season, I think Sunday's clash between Unai Emery and Roberto De Zerbi was probably the clash, wasn't it?
Yeah, definitely. You know, two teams that, you know, Villa on one hand, you know, thought they were getting, you know, the great new manager in Steven Gerrard, but then kind of made a really shrewd appointment in bringing Emery back. And that's paid off for them big time, isn't it? Because, you know, he has made them look a really good side. You get the impression that if he's given the right tools this summer and can get the right players in, he could take Villa maybe even further than where they are right now. And, you know, you'd have to say the same for Brighton and De Zerbi. You know, great appointment. He's come in. You can see the players really want to play for him. You can see there's a brand of football. And ultimately, that is what happens when clubs act and run themselves properly. So you just have to give both of them credit, and both deserve to have European football next season.
Now, Matthew, does this also show how important coaching is? Let's look at it from a Aston Villa point of view. Emery comes in with the club are 17th and they're just out of the relegation zone on goal difference alone. They finished seventh. So obviously winning matches is the base answer, but what was he doing differently?
I think it might just been a lack of experience and lack of, you know, because Unai Emery's managed some very big teams, has gone through important games, and for Aston Villa, at least at the start when they were struggling, every game would have been a big game, and then as they get towards the, you know, towards the last stage of the season, trying to get to Europe, every game was a big game as they tried to get toward Europe. So I think it might just be a man management thing of how to get the best out of the players. Like we talk about with Pep Guardiola getting teams over the line, and Jurgen Klopp has been over the line, and what Mikel Arteta hasn't got, again, because he's quite young in management. So it might just be a case of knowing what to do to get teams over the line from their starting standpoint, as it were. So I think that's probably the crucial thing. I'd say coaching, what he does exactly on the training ground and formation, everything. But I think a large part of that is what he can instill into the players mentally more than anything.
Now, Wolves did a lot wrong on Sunday. They were smashed at Arsenal. Carl, there's been talk of Unai Lopetegui walking away from Molineux this early due to, I think, FFP is coming in and there's a lack of budget, which Wolves kind of need to spend money when you look at the squads. Do you reckon that had any bearing on the performance come Sunday? You know, because I don't think Lopetegui's announced he's going, so there's obviously whispers, quite loud ones. Is that enough for the players to be concerned and then not turn up at the Emirates?
I don't think that would have probably been the reason for that result. I think, you know, there's a sort of perfect storm. I think Wolves were just seeing games out at this point, weren't they? You know, they knew they were safe. You know, they'd been up and down all season. And ultimately, you're going into that last game, going, well, there's nothing riding on it now. You're also playing an Arsenal team at home who are well up for it because they want to try and finish the season strongly in front of their own fans. And you've got a Villa, a Wolves side that ultimately needs a lot of work. So I wasn't surprised at the result because I think Wolves have just thrown the towel in and just couldn't wait for that game to be over. And, you know, we've seen lots of teams that, you know, when they're in that position, they're already on the beach, the players have checked out. And that's probably what's happened this weekend. But the one thing is that result kind of does make you really worry for Wolves going into next season. And ultimately, if there wasn't massive changes and some really good signings there, I would stick them in my three that I reckon could be in trouble next season.
Now, Matthew, I know you've been sort of singing the praises of Lopetegui on the show across the season, or at least the half season he's been in the job. So is Wolves' survival next season going to be integral as him staying in the job? Obviously, with Bruno Lage in charge, they weren't really anything. They had that Steve Davis for a few weeks. He didn't really do much at all, did he? So it's been a better second half. There's no doubt about that. But do you fear that if it's no Lopetegui, they're going to sink back down the table?
I think it could, because I think there's a certain culture around Wolves that I think only certain managers can bring in. I don't trust it with a British manager just because of how big the foreign import is and, you know, the relationship with Jorge Mendes and everything. I think it's just when you're dealing with that many, you know, international players, I think you need to have an international manager take over it. And, you know, I think if you look at the managers that are available, again, I don't see a Brendan Rodgers going there, for instance. So someone like Lopetegui, I think, will probably be crucially key around just to keep the culture around the club roughly the same, rather than having to make a big, you know, a big cultural change and, you know, possibly jeopardising their chances for next season.
I guess the bigger question is whether Wolves need to evolve from that culture. You know, is that the thing that's holding them back? Again, I'm not going to bash that they've got too many foreign players, but do they need to move on from that? When we saw the likes of, you know, Ruben Neves and Jota come through the Premier League, Raul Jimenez as well, that kind of era of Wolves is really fresh and exciting, but it just seems stale now. And I think that maybe they're too beholden by Jorge Mendes, and that's maybe something that's holding them back, because they're always sort of looking at Portuguese players and thinking, okay, if we work through Mendes, you get these names, but are they really the players that Wolves need? I guess we won't know the answer of that until next season. But before that, we have to talk about Man City. They've taken their foot off the pedal in the past 2 weeks, or the past week, last two games, shall I say. And that's fair enough, Carl, because they won the Premier League. The treble's still in sight, so you can't really blame Pep for dialing down the performance over the last couple of weeks, and especially with an FA Cup final this Saturday.
No, 100%, Dan. You know, once the title was in the bag, then you have got to be sensible, haven't you? And I think if you was a manager that was putting your best side out and still making them try and go for everything and put their bodies on the line, you would, as a fan, be screaming at the telly, wouldn't you? Saying, like, what are you doing? You know, we've got two cup finals coming up and we want to win it to go down in history alongside that great Man United side, because it's always being held over us. So you certainly can't blame them. I would want Spurs to be doing exactly the same thing if we were in that position. And ultimately, I wasn't surprised at that, you know, that result at the weekend, because they've got their eye on other things, and rightly so.
Well, were it not for Villa and Spurs wins, it would have meant Brentford were in Europe. But as for Brentford, or Hounslow Town, Matthew, as you call them, let's talk about Ivan Toney's ban, because we spoke about this last week and some new information has come to light. The FA have explained their ruling. Now, it was going to be an 11-month ban to start with, but he has been diagnosed with a gambling addiction. Now we know the full extent of his crimes, for use of a better word. What do you make of this latest information? Because it does actually turn out he was betting on his own games.
Yeah, it's a bit of a tough one, because I don't want to... As much as I don't like the whole situation, I don't like the club, there is part of me that has to be very careful, because I don't want to rip into Ivan Toney too much in this situation. As you said, because he's got a gambling addiction and everything, and we don't want to make light or make fun of that. But at the same time, I still don't get the logic. An 11-month ban, I think would have been fine, would have been justified, would have put him out till, you know, late April. He probably would have said just ban off the whole season if you've had a whole season not playing. What good are you going to be in the last month if you're not match fit and everything? No, to then have it reduced to 8, given the information that, again, we've got, that he was betting on, his own team, but I know there's some litigating factors. It was whilst he was on loan at someone, so it wasn't specifically his own team, but he was also being on his team while he was there and all this sort of stuff. He was under his all of that. I don't think that a gambling addiction and this being a thing is something that should reduce centers or be a sort of oh woe is me thing about. I think if anything, it should be a harsher punishment, because again, if you show this, then we need to do something to put a stop to it right now, so you don't do it again in the future. So the way this has all been handled, it just doesn't sit right with me. And it's not just because it's a house hotel thing. This is just in general thing. The way this has all been handled, from when he was charged to how long it's taken to be done, especially given the fact that he admitted guilt to it, the way this has all been handled, I think, sets a bad precedent for what is going to come down the line when inevitably another player gets caught with the same thing.
Okay, then, Carl, let's ask you, as a non-Brentford-hating fan of football, is Antony a lucky boy in essence?
Yeah, I think so. I think, anyone, let's say whether you're a fan of a team or not, I think you can sit there and kind of go, so hang on, you want to give him an 8-month ban, but ultimately 3 months of it don't really mean anything. I think anyone who looks at that sensibly kind of goes, yeah, we don't understand the thinking behind this, because ultimately the punishment is there to be a deterrent. If players suddenly think, well, yeah, listen, look, if I get 6 months, there's a good chance 3-4 months of that don't really count, and I'm not missing for as much football as I should technically be. So I do think there was a poor handling of that. There is obviously the other side of things that, this guy does need some help. We don't want to make sure that he's just sent off into the wilderness and, never seen again, and suddenly just deteriorates and goes downhill. But I'm sure the right processes will be in place from not only the FA, but Brentford themselves as a club will make sure they look after him, get him the right treatment that he maybe needs. And I'm sure, Ivan Toney probably won't do this again. But we need to try and send out a punishment that makes any other footballer go, yep, no, I'm not doing this. And ultimately, if you're going to, large chunks of a ban don't really apply, I don't see how that kind of puts people off.
Now, Matthew, not really a question you can answer right now. There's no real right answer. But Graham Potter, where do you reckon his next club will be in terms of management?
Oh, you caught me off guard there. I reckon he'll be first name in line for the first manager sacking of the season come October, November time. I think whoever's the first team to sack their manager, I think he goes there.
Okay,
whoever that may be, I can't put a specific name on it.
All right, let me make it a little bit easier. What if I was to say, during the summer, Crystal Palace, yes or no?
No, I think his attachment to Brighton's too strong. I don't think he'd want to do that.
Fair enough. Okay, Carl, let's ask you a Crystal Palace question. Wilf Sahar. Now, there's no information about a new manager. There's no real information about him signing a new contract. Reports of £200,000 a week. He's 31. Is he worth it? Will he stay? What do you reckon?
I think he'll stay, to be honest, because I think you'd like to think that, the Premier League is where it's at to be as a player, isn't it? I think, unfortunately for Wilf, his chance of a big move was possibly maybe 2 to 3 seasons previous to that. And ultimately now, I think he may come to this realisation that the sort of sides that he may feel he'd want to go and play for and not going to come in for him. So he might actually just be better off at Palace now and kind of making sure he becomes one of their legends and one of their all-time heroes, which I'm sure he probably already is. But, if he just stays and just carries on seeing and helping that team along, then that might be the legacy that he has. And ultimately, maybe there will be some dependence on what sort of manager comes in during the summer. I think Roy, he likes Roy, had a good relationship with Roy. But if you can get someone in who's got a bit of character about them, they might be able to convince him just to stay, because I think those big moves that he's dreaming of are not coming his way. And let's face it, you really want to go off somewhere else. Yes, the money might be great, but once you kind of leave the Premier League, if he goes to, say Saudi Arabia or somewhere to play football, he'll just become a forgotten man that no one's really talking about again.
Yeah, I think that's the danger for Wilf Sahar. Matthew, no danger for you in terms of relegation. 10th place in the league table. We spoke a few months ago about do Fulham really want Europe so early? Because it creates a bit of a pressure next season with a stretched squad and all those extra matches. So is 10th about the right finish for you? Because it doesn't hide expectation too much next time round. And what do you need to do next time round to make sure you stay in that bracket?
I'd say 10th is the perfect finish for us. You know, we got a strong squad, we've got a strong base. I can't see many departures this summer. So we should be able to keep the core of the squad together, especially Yao Pelini and Alexander Mitrovic. Those are the two key guys. You know, a couple of extra defenders, because whilst he's been fantastic, I still don't trust Tim Ream. And just squad depth, just Premier League quality, strong squad depth, so that, you know, maybe we can stretch out and go for, you know, a run in the League Cup, for instance, or a run in the FA Cup, for instance. So I think that's all we really need to do. So long as we don't sell anyone in the first team, I think that's probably good enough for another season of safety, I would say.
Yeah, the building blocks are certainly there. But we've hit not only full-time for this show, we've hit full-time for the season. So I just need to do the admin for the final time of this campaign. Matthew, thanks for all your time this season. I know you flirted with another shape football during the campaign, so we'll let that slide. But hopefully, I hope you've enjoyed all the time you've given me.
It's absolutely good to take pressure away from, you know, what I get paid for, talking about the oblong ball, to just, you know, kick back a bit, relax, and talk about the rod shaped ball, shall we say. So yeah, it's been a pleasure all season, and I very much look forward to doing exactly the same next year.
Thanks very much. My agent will be in chat with you about your extension. And Carl, thanks for wearing the captain's armband, not just this week, but across the season. Hope you'll join me again after the summer break as we talk your terms for another year.
Yeah, definitely, Dan. You know, always enjoy this podcast and chatting about all things Premier League. So I'll definitely be back next season.
Absolutely. Right. Cheers, guys. And also to the listeners out there. And with that said, it just leaves me to say that my name's Dan Tracy. This is The Real Football Cast. And until next time, goodbye.
Podcast is part of the Sports Social Podcast Network.
My Diesel Claim sponsors football on Sports Social, turning the end of season tears into diesel claim cheers. Check if you're eligible for significant compensation for free at mydieselclaim.com now.